Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us. This is Patrick Connor for Queensbury Rules Radio once more. I'm going to be joined in just a minute here by James Foley, my co-host, and we're going to be recapping, of course, this last weekend of action that we had. And, of course, this coming weekend is going to be a little bit slow, so you can expect a little bit of a preview from us this weekend, but it's not going to be a whole lot. But let me patch in James here. James, how's it going?
How's it going, man?
Not too bad, dude. There's a lot of boxing on this weekend once again, so I'm feeling lucky. I'm feeling like we're blessed as fans. And you know what? I'm so happy to have seen the pound-for-pound number one all-time great Floyd Mayweather in action once again.
It was the best $70 I've ever spent.
And plus, you know, if you got it in high def or whatever, it was a couple extra bucks. And
that was the high
mug.
Def, yeah.
And then they send you the mug and the hand soap and the socks and stuff, you know. It's pretty cool. So,
that was a good one.
You know, I'll say right off the bat that I expected the fight card, the pay-per-view card, to be a little bit better than it was. But, you know, I don't really have any complaints about it myself. You know, I obviously wish it was a little bit cheaper. But at the same time, you know, we got four pretty decent fights. So, you know, no complaint for me. But I guess we'll just kick right into it. And Floyd Mayweather, Robert Guerrero, how'd you score it?
Well, I basically stopped keeping score once it was into the late rounds. I don't think there's any way Guerrero was even close to winning it. I saw it as anywhere from, you know, maybe a 9-3 to, I think you arguably could have scored every single round for Floyd.
Yeah,
I think that would have been a little bit one-sided. You know, you probably want to give Guerrero a little benefit in a couple of the close ones, but, I mean, anything closer than 9-3, I think, was too close.
Yeah, you know, I wound up scoring it 11-1 when I was watching it, and when I kind of, you know, when I rewatched it, and yes, I actually did rewatch it, when I rewatched it, I thought it was a little bit closer to how the cards had it, which was 9-3. I thought that was fair. You know, the last couple rounds, it was pretty clear that Floyd was basically coasting. He knew he had the fight in the bag, and maybe it was also that he had hurt his hand, too. So, you know, he didn't really look like he was really emphatically going for a knockout or anything. So I think that if you wanted to give Guerrero an early round and then a late round or something, then that's fine. But, you know, what the kind of, at least the talk that I've seen and the talk that I've been involved in the last couple days since the fight has been, you know, where is Floyd and on an all-time, like, you know, ranking scale? Did this fight affect that at all? And, you know, where is he now? What are we looking for him next? And blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't think this fight affected that at all. I think with Floyd, I always look at those all-time rankings as kind of two categories. You know, how good is a guy at his very best? And what has he actually accomplished? You know, who has he beaten? Who is on his resume? And with Floyd in the first category, you know, he's looked amazing. He's looked invincible for, you know, 12 years or however long it's been since he's really been on the world stage. I think the second is where he does come up short against a lot of other fighters, but I haven't really looked at it closely enough to give a number. I mean, you know, off the top of my head, I think he's probably somewhere in the back end of maybe the top 50. But at the same time, fighters always seem to grow, you know, their legends grow as time goes by. So 30 years from now, who knows, maybe we'll look back and say, oh, Floyd's, you know, clearly a top 20. Right now, I just think it's tough to have him ranked. When you look at some guys from, you know, the previous few decades, like a Pernell Whitaker or Sugar Ray Leonard, it's tough to put Floyd ahead of those guys just based on the quality of competition.
And that's really what it comes down to for me. You know, a lot of the listeners, you know, some of our friends, et cetera, already know that I run the boxing history Twitter account and stuff like that. And I do a lot of history writing, research, et cetera. So, you know, I'm certainly not any supreme authority on the subject, but I do think that I am, you know, maybe a little bit more qualified than the average fan to be able to rank, even though I don't like making rankings very often. Regardless, I would have to say that you're probably right. I'd say he's maybe top 30, top 40, something like that. And at the end of the day, the lack of really strong opposition in this era, that's what hurts him. It's not that he's a bad fighter. He's a terrific fighter. He's probably the best of this era. But and also I should throw in that he could probably hang with a great number of some of the best fighters ever, you know, if in the pound for pound sense or whatever, a mythical sense. But that lack of opposition, that lack of a really big defining win against a guy who's in his prime and who's the same size and, you know, et cetera, I think that that hurts him. That's kind of what a win against Manny Pacquiao would have done. Although at this point, it's that I don't even really want to spend time talking about that, but you know what I mean?
I think it's, you know, when you look at his ledger, and I guess most people probably consider the win over Diego Corrales to be his best win. I just think there's a lot of guys with better wins than that, for one.
Yeah.
You know, Corrales.
Definitely.
Corrales was awesome. But as far as, and, you know, I don't want to bring up, like, you know, issues regarding, you know, I mean, like, the guy's 6 feet tall, shrinking down to 130 pounds. I think that probably affected his performance a little bit that night. But that doesn't really matter. I mean, bottom line, they had to show up in the ring, and Floyd really worked him over and knocked him down, like, six times and dominated him. So that was a great performance from him, no doubt. But that just doesn't stack up against guys who have beaten real elite-level opponents, you know, and more than just one of them. And I just think that's a big problem when you're comparing him to other fighters. I mean, he's a great fighter. There's no question about it. Just a defensive master. And, you know, Saturday night was just another, I mean, it was a brilliant performance. So it's always a little touchy. People take it, I think, a little too seriously. I mean, ultimately, it's just a matter of opinion.
Yeah, he's a polarizing figure. And, you know, to his credit, that's what he wants. That's what sells fights. I don't really want to speculate on the pay-per-view buy rate right now. You know, a lot of people are talking about it on Twitter, you know, as we speak. But you know, that's what he wants. He wants to be controversial so that people tune in. And it works, because he's obviously the biggest draw in boxing right now and in the last handful of years. So basically, I think that the question is now, you know, where does he go from here? Who is he supposed to fight? Who should we reasonably expect him to fight next?
Well, it's a tough question, because obviously we would like to see him fight somebody like Canelo Alvarez or maybe even Sergio Martinez. But is it really fair to say that, you know, he has to take those fights, considering the fact that he is campaigning at welterweight and he's not a huge welterweight? So in his own division, you know, most of the best opponents I think would probably be at 140. I mean, I would love to see him get in with whoever comes out of that Lucas Matisse, Lamont Peterson, Danny Garcia triangle. I do think that opponent would have a much better shot than Guerrero did. I don't really know. I mean, names floating around, Devin Alexander, Amir Khan. Yeah, it just doesn't really
Canelo Alvarez. You know,
well, Canelo Alvarez, I think that would be a great fight. I think it would be a great promotion, and I think that's just the perfect matchup. But, I don't know if it's really fair to say Floyd has to take that fight, considering that Canelo is, you know, a genuine 154-pounder.
No, I would agree. I don't think that it's the type of fight that we need to be necessarily, you know, hardcore expecting from him. But yeah, that is a fight that I think presents enough problems in terms of, you know, trying to figure out who's going to win and how, that it's interesting. But, you know, I think that another guy on his way up who fought right underneath that fight on the undercard was Abner Mattis. He wound up stopping Daniel Ponce de Leon. It's kind of a controversial stoppage. You know, I was excited for that fight personally. I thought that it did wind up delivering in a slightly different way than many of us thought. But, you know, I enjoyed it quite a bit, and it was kind of like, I was kind of shocked by the fact that Abner Mattis had as much power as he seemed to have in new division. Granted, Daniel Ponce de Leon, he's not actually, he's not exactly known as a super sturdy guy. He's been hurt before, but still, you know, the way that Abner Mattis handled him, I thought was very impressive. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it was really impressive too, especially showing the power that he had to knock him down. I mean, he caught him with perfect punches, and that's, it was a really encouraging sign to think that Mares can be viable at that weight, because he, you know, he was not a particularly, he wasn't even that big as a bantamweight, and now he's fighting at featherweight. He's a pretty smaller, shorter guy. I think he's listed at 5'4.5". That might even be a reach, but it was a great performance from him. And he's fighting a guy who's been in with, you know, elite-level opponents at a higher weight class, Gamboa and Broner. Now, Broner wasn't as developed as he is now, but Mares took care of De Leon probably easier than either of those guys. I just think it was really impressive. I think the problem for Mares is going to be his opponent selection now. You know, most of the top names are, you know, either promoted or affiliated by Top Rank.
And I think that we both felt that his ceiling, Abner Mattis' ceiling, that is, would be a little bit lower than what it sure seemed to be on Saturday night. I think that, coming into the fight, I was expecting Daniel Ponte de Leon to have more effect with his punches. And towards the end there, it did kind of look as though he was coming on. You know, he was starting to kind of, his punching power starting to tell its, you know, take its toll a little bit, but at the same time, you know, it was just kind of almost out of nowhere. You know, I started giving him a couple rounds because he was doing well. He was kind of starting to push Mattis back. It looked like Abner was running out of steam, and then pow, right hand, right on the kisser. And the guy was, you know, for all intents and purposes, his legs were gone after that. Now, what about the stoppage? What did you think about the stoppage?
I think it was a little quick considering, anytime a ref jumps in to stop it and the guy's still throwing punches back, it's usually probably not a great stoppage. He did eat six or seven pretty clean right hands right before that. I think part of with Jay Nady there, it's just timing is so important. If he jumped in 2 seconds earlier, right after De Leon ate one of those punches, we might have all said, oh, okay, or, you know, he was kind of taking a beating on the ropes. But it's the fact that he jumped in right as De Leon was kind of throwing some counters, you know, and I ultimately don't think it really affected the fight, but I guess De Leon probably deserved a chance to, you know, hang in there a little bit longer. He was fighting back, and, you know, usually that's a sign that the fight should not be stopped.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that he was kind of in the motion of throwing a punch and the fact that he has some legit punching power, those two things combined, I think, just kind of left a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouth. But at the same time, I'm with you. I think that it was kind of early, but I don't want to say it was a foregone conclusion, but his legs looked like they were going real quick. And so, you know, he got up wobbly. He basically just went to the ropes. And I don't know that he would have been able to last the round, you know. But, of course, we would rather have a clean stoppage.
I think it's always better to err on the side of caution. He was obviously hurt. So you'd rather see a quick stoppage than see, you know, something bad happen. It's not an easy job. You know, it's tough to criticize a guy there. I mean, the guy, you know, De Leon had been down twice. He was clearly losing on points. He was kind of getting beat up against the ropes. I don't really fault Jay Nady for doing it. I think it's just the exact moment that he chose to do it, it kind of looked bad, you know. I mean, another 10 or 15 seconds
exactly,
and maybe a few more unanswered punches and none of us would have complained.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, I've been a detractor of Jay Nady for a long time. I'm not a fan. Probably.
Yeah, I don't think he has many fans.
Yeah, I mean, but in this instance, I don't begrudge him too much. You know, he was jumping in. He was looking in the best interest of Ponce de Leon. So, actually, on the fight right before that was Leo Santa Cruz versus Alexander Munoz. Now, Leo Santa Cruz, basically just a tornado with arms. This guy is a punching machine, and I love him for it. You know, I have really not a whole lot bad to say about the kid, except for that, you know, the opposition that I think that a lot of people have been hoping that he might be able to reach soon keeps moving up away from him. Not necessarily avoiding him, of course, but he's just kind of, he keeps being left scraps. And, you know, I'd kind of like to see him tested just a little bit more. You know, what was your opinion of that fight?
Well, it was tough to see that with Munoz because the guy obviously has so much heart and so much courage, and he was just completely overmatched. And he'd been out of the sport for a few years, and he's older. And, you know, the smaller the fighter is, usually the worse that they age. And I think you saw that the guy just didn't have the type of, you know, reflexes or I mean, he came out and he tried to make it a fight, but Santa Cruz just basically bowled him over. And you got to be impressed with Santa Cruz. I mean, he's really exciting to watch. He's one of those guys. His stock has really risen in the last year with a lot of the notoriety he's getting from fighting on the Showtime undercards, and he was on the CBS card, and you know now he's on a pay-per-view. So I mean, I like Santa Cruz a lot. But yeah, as far as where he goes from here and you know what kind of opponents can he fight next? I mean, you could do a lot worse than Mahrez and Santa Cruz, but that's a pretty huge step up for Santa Cruz. And the kind of fight that you might be rushing him in there a little bit too early if you make that, you know, next or sometime later this year. But ultimately, I mean, I think Golden Boy's got a really good thing on their hands with that potential matchup because Mahrez might also struggle to find opponents, and they might try to, you know, match him up with a Johnny Gonzalez or somebody like that. And in the meantime, if Santa Cruz can kind of keep, you know, going up another level, that's a great fight that can happen maybe sometime next year. I mean, I think that's just a great fight.
You know, I think that Leo Santa Cruz is the type of guy that you need to move along. I don't want to say real quick, but you need to strike while the iron's hot with this kid because with his style, he's not going to last that long in the sport. There's just no way he can. You know, I want him to because he's so fun to watch, but, you know, he gets hit a fair amount. You know, his defense is improving from what I've seen. But he does get hit, and that's going to wind up being a problem if he, you know, if he kind of moves at a slower pace, I think. So I hope that they're able to get him in there and test him properly and everything. But, you know, another guy who is kind of if you believe, like, the news, you know, the newsletters and all that stuff, kind of an understudy of Floyd Mayweather, if you will, is Jaylion Love. He wound up taking a decision over Gabriel Rosado in the opening bout. So, you know, I personally thought that Gabe Rosado probably deserved to win that fight. It was kind of close. I thought Rosado, I don't want to say that he pulled any punches by any means, but he kind of eased up just a little bit in a few rounds and just enough to be able to justify giving Jaylion Love that decision. Who did you have winning that fight?
I thought Rosado probably deserved it. I wasn't really scoring it closely round by round, but here's the thing about that fight. First of all, I thought it was the best fight of the card. I thought it was a really good fight. I think it was one of those things where both guys probably underestimated each other a little bit. I don't think that Love realized that Rosado was going to be as tough as he was, and I don't think Rosado realized, and we probably didn't realize either, that Love was going to be resilient enough to get hurt like that and pick himself up and, you know, have moments of success for the rest of that fight. I mean, he really, you know, say what you will about his shortcomings as far as skills and all that stuff, but, you know, the guy showed a lot of heart to just get up, and he was badly hurt. He was really lucky that happened at the end of the round because he looked out of it when he got knocked down. I think it was at the end of the fifth, maybe. So, you know, I felt like as that fight was playing out, it just seemed like Rosado was maybe surprised that Love was still hanging around. And then it, you know, it turned into maybe a little bit more tactical fight in those last, like, few rounds before he kind of hurt him again toward the end. But, yeah, I think Rosado deserved the win, but it was close. And it's one of those fights that kind of speaks to some problems with boxing scoring because, obviously, Rosado did the most damage. He hurt him the most by far. His rounds were much more dominant than Love's rounds. But there were, you know, maybe four, five, six rounds that you could have theoretically scored to Love just on you know, more precise, like, and more activity and that kind of thing. But so Rosado won the fight, but I think it was a boxing match that really could have gone either way if you were scoring round by round.
You know, and going right back to what you were just saying, and I don't want to lose any of the listeners here because I'm going to bring up MMA really briefly. But, you know, a handful of years ago, there was an MMA promotion out of Japan called Pride FC. And the way that fights were scored there was basically that the amount of damage done, they had rounds, but the amount of damage done was basically the deciding factor in the fight. Now, obviously, that's subjective. There's no way to look at a Jay Leon Love versus Gabe Rosado fight and say, you know, and be able to definitively say, this one did more damage. You know, you can look at their faces, you know, what if someone is cut or whatever, and that's one thing. But I think that it's an interesting way of scoring because we do get these type of decisions where one guy clearly did more damage. And, you know, he scored the knockdown. He landed the harder punches consistently and, you know, was pushing Jay Leon Love back. But then Jay Leon Love winds up taking a decision that, you know, a lot of people disagreed with. But at the same time, I didn't see that as, you know, a total dominating performance from Gabe Rosado. So I think that just kind of opens the door to for these type of decisions, as you said.
Yeah, and I think it took Rosado a few rounds to kind of get into his rhythm and start timing Love to catch him with those kind of shots later. The one thing, I mean, the 97-92 card I thought was pretty ridiculous to have it 8-2 in rounds for Love. I mean, that just wasn't giving Rosado anywhere near enough credit.
No.
You know, but that you're right. Dirty. I mean, it could have, you know, it was one of those ones that could have gone either way. I always kind of look at it like if that was a street fight, everybody watching it would have said Rosado won. He knocked him down. He had
him
hurt. You know, but it's not. It's not a street fight. I mean, it's a boxing match, and you score round by round, and you go 10-9. It wasn't inconceivable that Love had enough rounds to win it.
Inconceivable? Is that a Princess Bride reference?
Not intentionally, but I'll take it.
Well, I'll turn it into one. In any event, those two guys, I think that they both showed something that night. I don't really think that either guy's stock should go down a whole lot. You know, they both fought hard. It was a pretty decent fight. Jay Leon Love got up from a knockdown, fought hard after that. Gabe Rosado, I said before the fight that his hand speed actually is a little bit surprising. He's not super quick, but he can snap shots fairly quickly. And Jay Leon Love is thought of as a, you know, pretty quickie type of guy. But he was getting caught. And, you know, in any event, it was a good fight. And I'd like to see both guys, you know, get something for that fight. I'd like to see Gabe Rosado be given another really solid opportunity because I think that he deserves one.
Well, and I'd love to see a rematch. But I think the worst thing about that fight is, like all these opening fights on pay-per-view undercards, the arena was completely empty. You know, if you'd had an active crowd that was getting into it, I mean, that was a really good fight. And then that always takes away a little bit of the drama when it's just completely dead silent behind it.
Yeah, and, it, you know, it was just, that's one thing that I kind of just don't really understand about live fights because I attend a fair amount, and it's just, you know, most of the undercard, the joint's empty. I don't know, just doesn't really seem like an effective way to get the most of your money, but that's just me. But also, you know, as I said last week, I'm a boxing whore, and if you put on boxing, I'll watch. So it is what it is. You know, people just want to see the main event. They want to see the big name. And I get it. That's fine. And, you know, but another guy, you know, over across seas who has no issue whatsoever selling out arenas, despite the fact that he is just not a very exciting fighter, Vladimir Klitschko, he wound up taking out Francesco Pianetta early Saturday. And, you know, as I told you in an email, I don't really want to spend a ton of time talking about this fight because it's not really worth spending a lot of time on, but I figured I'd mention it, and it was worth at least a short mention. Did you wind up catching it? And if you did, any thoughts? Did you hang yourself?
Did you try to shoot yourself?
Anything?
I didn't even watch it, man. I mean, I just had no interest in that. You know, I'm sorry.
No.
I mean, I felt like it was pretty predictable. You know, I was kind of getting ready on Saturday for the pay-per-view and all that, and it just Pianetta really didn't. I mean, the guy went the distance with, like, Oliver McCall last year.
Yeah, he's like I was saying on the show last week, he's kind of got a kind of funky, odd style where he was kind of, you know, I don't know, just being really twitchy and stuff like that. That was about all I saw from him. And, you know, I only watched one fight of his before the fight. I didn't catch it live, but I watched it real quick before boxing started later on that evening. You didn't miss much, really. It was just Pianetta getting dominated, knocked down a couple times and stopped. That was all.
Yeah, I mean, if Klitschko fights Povetkin, I mean, I think that's worth watching. I certainly favor Klitschko, but yeah, at least he's in there with somebody who's got, you know, something to bring to the table.
I mean, I used to think that Povetkin had a lot more promise than what he seems to show now. I don't know if it was getting with Teddy Atlas. I don't know if there was something going on in his head. I have no idea. But he, about 3 years ago, seemed, you know, like he would be stepping up to challenge a Klitschko and possibly be successful. Now, I don't see that type of fighter at all, personally. But whatever. It's the heavyweights. You know what I mean? Who gives a shit? But on Friday night fights, a card that we expected to be a little bit better, I think, or at least the main event that we expected to be a little bit better, was Mauricio Herrera versus Ji-Hoon Kim. You know, I think that for the most part we had expected a war, but that's not what we got. It was basically Herrera outclassing Ji-Hoon Kim, you know, to the tune of jabs to the face all night, and that was about it. The co-main event, or, you know, the co-feature, whatever you'd like to call it, was Miguel Gonzalez versus Miguel Acosta, and that was actually a pretty good fight. Mm-hmm. So what did you think about that card?
It was kind of disappointing, but I can't say I was really shocked about what happened in the main event. I mean, I just think Herrera's a better fighter. He's had more experience. He's fought better fighters, and he knows how to box. And, you know, Kim, it just seemed early on, you know, the guy was just throwing a lot of wild punches, and pretty quickly it was into Hail Mary mode, where he was going to just need to land something huge and hurt Herrera, or he was going to be pretty much hopeless the whole night. You know, the fact that Kim had just kind of gotten roughed up by Ray Beltran, and then you think back to Herrera having a lot of success early against a guy like Mike Alvarado, I think that maybe we were reaching a little bit to think that was going to be a really, you know, evenly matched war type of fight. But I mean, Kim's been in them before, and Herrera's been in a lot of entertaining fights, so it wasn't that, you know, I guess, wasn't that unreasonable.
I think that the style clash was what, you know, a lot of us, myself included, expected to be, you know, to make it a good fight. But it wound up being that Herrera had the option to box and had the option to, you know, kind of outmaneuver him, and that's what he did. You know, I don't blame him. There were a handful of exchanges where he chose to trade, and he did kind of step up. And there was, I want to say, one or two sequences where Ji-Hoon Kim actually caught him and, you know, looked like he might be getting something done, and then Herrera would basically just go back to boxing, and that was that.
Kim had more success, I think, in the last half of that fight. I mean, when the bell rang, Herrera was pretty marked up. So it's just that he was so dominant early and really just, you know, kind of embarrassing Kim in the first, you know, Kim just dug himself in a deep hole, but he definitely hit Herrera at times throughout the fight. I mean, I think Herrera had a, you know, pretty bad shiner by the end of it. But there was kind of sustained action that was, you know, made it some kind of a crazy event like we would have hoped for, you know, but
yeah, that is what we hoped, and that's not what happened, unfortunately. But it wasn't a terrible fight by any means. But going forward, Ji-Hoon Kim, I will say, he needs to, if he's going to be serious about competing in boxing and being put on TV and, you know, et cetera, someone needs to take him under their wing, pull him aside, get him a really good trainer, whatever the case may be. Because if I'm not mistaken, he's like 26 or something. He's not old. And he's just raw. There's not a whole lot of, like, setting punches up. He was whiffing so wide that it was like, you know, sending gusts of wind through the crowd. It was terrible. So I think that from here on out, he needs to just have some better instruction, better corner, et cetera.
Yeah, and there was already enough wind going through the crowd, because I think there was about 10 people there.
Yeah, no shit. And then you got Teddy Atlas talking. That's about enough wind, as much wind as you could ask for.
Exactly.
But you know, it was a Friday night fights card. I'm just hoping that that they stick with, you know, fairly quality matchups, and I'm hoping that these wind up being good. These things are these type of cards and Friday Night Fights and these other cards that are easily accessible as opposed to a pay-per-view or an HBO because not everyone has a subscription, et cetera. These type of cards are important. A lot of people write them off because it's just Friday Night Fights, you know. But I think that it's important to have a pretty consistent quality on these type of shows. And actually, the undercard fight was pretty good. Miguel Acosta, who a lot of people might not have been super familiar with, but he actually had a real fun scrap with Brandon Rios a few years ago that he lost. He wound up getting TKO'd. But early on, he hurt Brandon Rios pretty good a few times. And that's part of what made that fight fun, was that he was out ahead, he was kind of outboxing him, and then, you know, hurt Rios, and then wound up getting walked down himself. And, of course,
well, unless,
he lost.
You know, but, you know, I think Ellie Sec back on Showtime's Press Row had that 4-0 Rios. So not everyone thought that Acosta was winning that fight early. But, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's true.
He was really outboxing Rios, and it was a great fight. I just think Acosta's clearly on the downside. He fought that Armenian guy on Showtime. I can't remember. Who am I thinking of here? Art Hovhannisyan?
Yes.
I think they had a draw, and that was a decent fight. But you see Acosta's such a great boxer, but he's clearly starting to fade physically. And it was a good fight, though, on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really ask for a ton more from you know, a Friday Night Fights card. You know, just because a fight is great on paper doesn't mean it's going to play out that way. And we kind of just, you know, I'll deal with it because it's free boxing.
Yeah, and we'll see Herrera actually, again. You know, great opponent for a lot of the up-and-coming 140.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's, well, you know, he I wouldn't say that he won a whole lot of rounds against Mike Alvarado, but he sure as hell hung in there, and he made the fight fun by hanging in there and just banging away. You know, I mean, he was forced to do it, but at the same time, he did. And like I said, I wouldn't have given him a ton of rounds, but he did his part, you know. And I think that if you're able to, you know, hang in the pocket with a guy like Mike Alvarado and take those type of shots, there's some promise there. Even if it is only on Friday Night Fights, there's some promise there. We're going to be joined in just a minute by Jimmy Tobin from Cruelest Sport. He's having a little bit of a technical difficulty, he said. But he said he's going to call in just a minute. So I guess we'll just kind of BS about last weekend until that time. And actually, really quick, I don't know if you watched it, and if you didn't, that's fine. Antonio Orozco versus Jose Reynoso was also on TV the other night. I think that was on Univision or Unimas or something. And like I said, I don't know if you saw it, but Antonio Orozco is kind of an up-and-coming type of guy. You know, he's been on TV or on streams, you know, kind of like undercard streams a handful of times by now. But I will say that he looked about as sharp as I've seen him look the other night. Did you wind up catching that fight?
I didn't. Sorry. Yeah,
no, it's
but
fine.
Based on your description, I actually want. I'm kind of intrigued to check it out now.
He's not, like I said, he's not a super, I guess, promising guy. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about where exactly he's going to go. But at the same time, he sets up camp here in San Diego, which is where I am. And he has fought here a number of times. I've actually seen him fight twice here. Every so often, they have these kind of smaller cards here in San Diego that are at basically a hotel. And it's, I don't know, I would say maximum capacity is probably like 1,000 people or something. It's not much. But he's fought there a couple of times, and I've seen him. And, you know, usually I don't think much of guys that are fighting at those cards. You know, no offense to them, but they're just not big cards, and I can't imagine they're making more than, you know, like a couple $100 or something for him. But I remember seeing him then and thinking, all right, you know, he seems to be fairly classy for this type of card, but he's been progressing steadily. And the other night I thought that he actually looked like a, you know, for lack of a better term, a real fighter. I would recommend checking it out anyway. Of course, you know, when they have big fights in Vegas too, what they wind up doing a lot of the time is they will set up some Friday night card to kind of be a, you know, kind of like an appetizer for the following evening when they have a big pay-per-view card in Vegas, and that's what they wound up doing, and that was the card that he was
I knew about that card.
Yeah, in the Chelsea Ballroom.
Anthony Durrell was
so
on
there. Yeah, and actually he was on it as well. He's making his comeback in the sport, and so anyway, that's what they wind up doing a lot of the time. So if you're ever in Vegas some weekend for a bigger fight, you know, usually you can find tickets for that kind of Friday night card for pretty cheap. So it's worth checking out anyway, and I think that I sent you a link for that fight. So yeah, check it out if you get a moment.
You did. I just fucked it. Fucked you. I'm sorry.
Oh, dude. I'm going to hang up now. I'm done. No, I'm kidding. I'm not done. But I guess we'll just start really quick.
Well, are we still waiting for Tobe?
We are. He said that he was dealing with something real quick and that he'd be a few minutes. So, and I don't see him.
Can we jump back to just some more thoughts about the Mayweather-Guerrero fight?
Yeah,
or
for
do
sure.
You want to get into some... I mean, there's not much going on this weekend.
No,
we'll talk about some of those fights in a bit.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, I felt like maybe I was a little too hard on Guerrero in kind of some of my comments in the aftermath of that fight. Guerrero's a good fighter. You know, there's no question about that. I don't think he's really an elite ever. I don't think he has the talent to be an elite guy in terms of, you know, like a number, you know, the best guy in his weight class or a pound-for-pound level talent. But he's a tough fighter, and he's definitely going to get another opportunity after this. You know, he made, I think, $3 million against Floyd, which is by far career-high payday. And, you know, just getting that notoriety against Floyd, he's going to be a perfect target for a lot of the guys coming up from 140 to kind of compare themselves to Mayweather, you know, fight a guy like Guerrero and try to look as good as Floyd did or try to stop him, you know, that kind of thing. So he should get another big payday, and, you know, I think, well, as long as he doesn't go to jail for 4 years, but where do you think Guerrero goes from here? I mean, where do you see him getting right back in the mix with some of these Golden Boy guys at 40 and 47?
Well, you know, I think that I'm skeptical of what Guerrero can do at 147 pounds or above.
I think above would be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, this is the talk. I don't even know, you know, I have no control over where it goes, but
sure.
One of the things that I will say, I'll get back to what I was saying real quick a minute ago, but real quick, I wanted to say that last week when we had Tim Sarks on, something that both you and him had mentioned is the fact that Guerrero really comes off as a confident guy in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's going to be really important for him. I think that that's going to be something that carries through with him, whether that comes from his faith, whether that comes from something else, I don't know. But
you know, he didn't seem particularly downtrodden after the fight.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good thing. You know, the fact that he was kind of just like, well, whatever, I lost. You know, it is what it is, and I respect that. You know, and it's kind of a stark contrast to, you know, like after Ricky Hatton lost to Manny Pacquiao, and obviously I know that was a different type of loss, but yeah, I feel bad for the guy. He said that he got like depressed and suicidal, and I think that that was, for all intents and purposes, just the end of his career. Not so much the knockout, but the fact that he took it so badly, and you know, that was pretty much the end. That ended it. So that said, I do feel somewhat confident about Guerrero being able to move forward and get some wins. But what made me skeptical about him at 147 pounds was the Aydin fight and the Berto fight, to be honest. Even though he beat Berto fairly easily, it was just there were things that I saw in those fights, and I wasn't so sure that he beat Aydin. But there were things that I saw in those fights that just I'm not 100% sure that he is a full welterweight in terms of strength and et cetera. He obviously can take a welterweight punch because Floyd was knocking his head all over the fucking place. And he took him, you know.
And he took some big punches against Berto. You know, he took some big punches against Aydin. He took a lot of punches against Katsidis, even though that was really one of the worst beatings I've ever seen. But he took some punches late in that fight. So I think the guy's really durable. I was thinking back about how when Guerrero, I think right after he beat Katsidis, he was going to move to 140. He was going to fight Marcos Maidana, and that fight was actually scheduled and set and, you know, being promoted, and then he was injured, and I think he was out for a year. And that's when he came back and he moved to 147 and fought Aydin. And I just think that if he had gone to 40, fought Maidana, you know, fought a couple other guys, he would have, you know, we would have had a much better idea of where he was at. I mean, the fact that Aydin lost so handily to Jesus Soto Carras, who's a really tough fighter, and he's big for a welterweight, but the fact that Aydin lost so handily in his next fight, and then we're dealing with this kind of, you know, enigmatic Berto who just mentally, you know, it just has made a lot of mistakes in the ring, and I think Guerrero's resume at 140 was being a little bit overvalued by some people going into this fight, and the fact that, you know, I'd heard people saying like, oh, Guerrero's, you know, he's a top welterweight, he's right, you know, he's right there with Tim Bradley, he's right behind Juan Manuel Marquez, but
exactly, and
those guys have fought such better competition and have such better wins, you know, even Bradley did at 140, let alone, you know, going up and just being on even terms, you know, relatively even terms with Pacquiao for the last, like, half of that fight. I mean, I think clearly Pacquiao won it, but just fighting a guy like Pacquiao, and Marquez knocks out Pacquiao, and, you know.
Let me patch through our friend here, and let him get in on the conversation, because I see that
bring
he's
him
waiting
in.
Now. Señor Tobin.
Helen.
How's it going, man? We can hear you.
You can.
Yes, well, it sounds like you're a little bit far from the mic or something, though.
Okay, let me slide closer to my computer. Is that better?
Yes, that's better.
Okay, good.
Yes.
I'm sitting awkwardly, but for you guys, I will sit awkwardly.
Please do it.
Okay.
So tell us,
what's up?
What did you think about the fights on Saturday and how did you score them? Lay it on us.
Well, I didn't score any of them because I generally don't do that.
You degenerate.
I'm a degenerate. Well, there's math involved, right? So I'm not going to go near it. but I thought Rosado won, but I could see it going for either guy. I mean, neither guy really staked a claim to that one. I saw that Rosado scored it for himself today. That's good to know, but I don't know. Yeah, that sold me on it. I thought it could have gone either way. I think that fight is pretty much those guys' ceiling as far as, you know, what they're going to accomplish. Leo Santa Cruz is a lot of fun, but, I mean, you can only watch a kid smack a pinata for so many times, right, before you want to see him in there with someone who is going to punch him back and answer some questions for everybody watching. Although I love to watch him fight, for sure.
Very
what
true.
Else was on that? What else was on that?
And then it
oh,
was...
And Ponce de Leon. That was pretty impressive. I mean, I rag on Mars because he punches guys in the crotch all the time and hits guys in the back and what have you. But that fight, he was clean and just kind of, you know, shorter punches, sharper punches, stayed inside. Ponce de Leon got rid of him. It's impressive that he got rid of him, even though I thought the stoppage was a little early. But, you know, that was,
you know,
Ponce de Leon.
There were a couple short sequences where Mahrez did kind of start to get a little bit, I don't want to say dirty, but he started to get a little bit rough. And then Ponce de Leon was like, no, we're not doing that. And he started getting rough back. And he was just, and I think at that point they were like, all right, we're not going to go down that road.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mahrez
sure.
was the guy who took a low blow in that fight. Who would have ever thought that would happen, huh?
Yeah. Where's Russell Moore at?
It's universal justice, my man. Universal justice. But the punch, I mean, Juanma blew out Ponce de Leon, but Juanma could really bang at 126. So, or 122, he did that, right? So.
Yes, it was 122.
That's an accomplishment. You know, I'm not a big Mahrez fan, but you can't take that away from him. It's pretty good. Ponce de Leon, kind of a limited dude. He's able to make just about everybody look bad. But Mahrez didn't look bad. So. Give him that. And then boy fight it. Whatever.
No, go ahead.
You first. I don't want Bogart all the time. Go for it.
Well, that's what you're here for. You're the guest. You're here to be Bogart, dude. We were just talking a couple minutes ago. Basically just about where Guerrero goes from here, and whether or not he proved to be a really viable 147 pounder. What do you think?
It's kind of interesting. Like, well, the first thing you got to figure is no one's going to beat Floyd at 147, right? So losing to him doesn't really matter, because what you're looking to do is get the fight against him, because that's where the money is, I would think. And then with the promotional stuff, like Bradley and all the top-ranked guys, they aren't going to fight him. So he has, you know, the guys at 147 that are Golden Boy, or even 140, because I imagine that, you know, 143 or something, if they wanted to make a fight, guys would agree to it.
Yeah.
He has options. He totally has options. He's not exceptional, but you don't have to be exceptional. So, you know, that wasn't the death knell on his career or anything like that. And he didn't, it's not like he even got knocked out. He just got handled. So, sure, he can come back and he can fight guys like Devin Alexander if they want to make that, or maybe Kell Brook, or he can, you know, like I was thinking, why doesn't he just, you know, want to make money, gain weight, see if Alvarez wants to beat you up and look better than Floyd did doing it. He has options for sure. I don't want to watch, but he's got a career there.
Well, and actually, before we get too much farther, I just want to kind of give you a plug. You know, you write for cruelestsport.com, thecruelestsport.com, sorry. And, you know, you frequently do previews and kind of recaps of fights. And anyone who has not checked out his writing previously, I strongly suggest you. No, I'll go a step farther than that. If you don't check out his fucking writing, I'm going to come to your house with a baseball bat, because he is an exceptional writer. He's very, very good. And The Cruelest Sport, that website, is also very, very good, kind of history-oriented. I should actually say that it's actually just slanted towards really good writing. That's pretty much all it is. It's really good writing about boxing. But Carlos Acevedo, Andy Frumann, you know, those guys do a lot of history stuff. But I strongly suggest you go there. I really do. And the recap of this weekend is no exception. It was a really good piece, Jimmy.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Obviously, I'm a big fan of you guys as well. But, yeah, thank you very much, my man.
No problem.
Now I'm all uncomfortable.
yeah.
Well, you helped us clear up the fact that he wasn't fighting Berto on Saturday night. So we appreciated that.
He wasn't fighting Berto. That's true.
Thank goodness for that.
She got a lot of mileage out of that fight.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Probably more than he should have, but...
I seem to be in the minority after that fight, because, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it was a bad fight, but
right.
I was not even close to being as entertained by the fight as most people seem to be. You know, like with my, at the end of the year, with my boxing history account, I asked what was the fight of the year, and a surprising amount of people said Guerrero-Berto. And I was like, really? Really, though? You thought that with all the stuff that we had last year, you thought that was the fight of the year? I mean, it was just kind of rough, and I mean, you know, there was a lot of, like, forearming and elbowing and headbutting and, like, smushing each other around and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, like I said, it wasn't a terrible fight by any means, but I wasn't that into it.
But that's the thing with Berto fights, right? Like, he's fun. He makes for good fights. But generally, the last half of his fights deteriorate into something ugly. You know, and the Ortiz fight was awesome. But the Ortiz fight was, like, some really good rounds, and then people throwing one punch and falling into each other and tripping over each other's feet or their own feet. And, you know, it gets kind of ugly. And that was the same with the Guerrero fight. And
if
doesn't catch his eye, if Berto's eye doesn't swell up like he's got an orange under his lid, you know, early, maybe that's different. That's kind of a fluky shot. But a mean-spirited ass-kicking, and that's nice to see. Like, Guerrero fought nasty, and that can be good. But I don't know that beating Berto is kind of some kind of stamp or membership in the, you know, pantheon of elite fighters right now. I don't know that you get that accomplishment from beating him, but it does seem to get you a Floyd fight. So,
Yeah, so anybody looking to fight Floyd, you know, start signing with Andre Berto.
Sure.
Well, somebody on Twitter, Haters Hatin', as you guys probably know him on there, he just said that you sound like Quentin Tarantino, Jimmy.
I look like Quentin Tarantino, so it makes sense that I sound like Quentin Tarantino.
That's awesome.
Is my Canadian accent really pronounced?
I don't know. You sound like Jimmy Tobin to me. But
yeah, you could be on the beach in California right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I should be on the beach in California right now.
So going forward from here, or actually I should ask, in terms of like the history, and, you know, James, I want to hear your voice over here too, but in terms of the history, we were talking earlier, does this do anything for Floyd to, you know, did this weekend do anything to propel him up, you know, up the ranks? Did hit the easy domination, or at least it sure looked easy to me. Did that do anything to, you know, make Floyd any better in his all-time stance?
Oh, do you want me to jump in? I kind of answered that earlier.
Whoever.
Yeah. I don't think so. But I just make a quick, you know, when I think to like the Sergio Martinez-Chavez fight, if, and I know it's kind of a big if, but if Chavez goes on to some kind of greatness in the rest of his career, well, you know, in 50 years they'll look back and that'll be a huge win for Sergio. I don't think Guerrero has that kind of upside to go on to some kind of greatness. So ultimately, I think it's probably more of a footnote kind of fight. I don't think he was, you know, I think Floyd's probably had 10 to 15 better opponents and better wins. If Floyd were to fight somebody like Broner or somebody, you know, and then Broner, if Floyd beat Broner and Broner went on to a great career. But as of now, I would say no.
What do you think, Jimmy?
I think that, sorry, I think Mayweather stopped caring about that and stopped really working on his legacy a while ago. And that his situation now, what did he get to go to Showtime? I don't know, $200 million or something like that? Like, who knows?
And
what he
makes crazy.
Those fights? Yeah, it's nuts. They're nuts to give him that. But it doesn't even matter. Like, he's playing it out, you know, he's fighting whoever. If he can sell Guerrero, he's going to fight Guerrero, but those fights aren't doing anything for him. Like, that guy, he already has accomplished, you know, the best things he could accomplish, he has already done. But anything at this point now, you know, doesn't matter. Either it doesn't contribute to whatever his legacy is, or if something messed up happens and he loses, it kind of, you know, cast a different glance on everything that he's accomplished because of how much of his aura is tied into his being undefeated. But I don't imagine that he's going to fight anybody that can beat him before he's done. So I don't think so. I mean, that's frustrating, you know, to just kind of see a guy play it out. But I think that's what he's doing.
Yeah, but I think there are fights for him that could enhance his legacy potentially. When you look at guys like, he probably won't fight Broner, but the Canelo fight I think could enhance his legacy. He beats Canelo, and Canelo goes on to bigger things, you know, later in his career. I think if he goes and beats even an older version, diminished version of Sergio, and gets a middleweight championship, the legitimate championship. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big move historically for him. But yeah, I agree. I mean, fighting like, you know, Devin Alexander and these guys, and it doesn't do a lot.
No, and I don't know that he's concerned with it.
I don't think he cares either.
If 30 mil to fight Devin Alexander, why are you going to risk it?
Yeah,
you know,
we can't criticize him for taking $35 million to fight Robert Guerrero and Devin Alexander. I mean, it's kind of brilliant, actually. It's, if anyone can criticize the, you know, 800,000 people who bought the pay-per-view and keep putting money into his pocket.
And they're kind of debating over what the number is going to be now. But, you know, in the pre-fight promotion, now, I don't know, like I said, maybe I'm just a curmudgeon, maybe I'm a, you know, as the kids are saying, a hater, but whatever you want to call it, I wasn't super enthused about this fight going in. I kind of made that clear. I said it in a number of different places. You know, I don't know. I just wasn't really that into it. But, you know, what I kind of found funny, and I don't know that this is the truth, I don't know that this is the case, but it sure seemed that way to me. A couple months ago when they dropped the, you know, Floyd is going to be fighting Devin Alexander thing, and everybody shit an egg. It was crazy.
Yeah, totally.
The internet basically turned inside out and threw up on itself. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, and so I kind of have the feeling that they did that just to kind of make the Guerrero fight seem better. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just kind of conspiracy theorizing, you know, theoreticizing in my mind or something, but I don't know.
You know, fucked up thing
is
I don't even think
know
if the Guerrero fight is better than that. I think aesthetically it's better, but I actually think Devin might be more competitive.
What's that,
so,
Jimmy?
I think he will probably fight Devin Alexander if he intends to fight six times in the... Like, if he's going to string out that contract and finish his contract, I imagine Devin Alexander gets in there at some point. So, provided he doesn't lose.
For whatever reason, those folks in St. Louis are showing up in packs to watch these St. Louis guys fight. So,
sure,
I mean, if they could sell out something in... Yeah, if they could sell out something in St. Louis, I have a little doubt that they would.
Yeah, it's not, I don't know, Foley, like you're saying, I don't know if the Guerrero fight is any better than the Devin Alexander fight. If he can sell these fights, then even if he can't, I mean, what does he make just for being there? You know, what does he pay just for fighting? Who cares what the pay-per-view buys are, because I can speak.
Well,
the brutal
thing about the Devin Alexander fight is, you know, if he had fought Kell Brook and got that win, then maybe you could kind of rationalize that. Okay, Alexander, you know, it was controversial, mm-hmm. but he got the win over Matisse. He beat, you know, a decent welterweight contender in Kell Brook. But now he's fighting Lee Purdy. I mean, if he gets that fight in the fall, it's just, you know, no one's going to be excited about it.
No, I won't be anyway. But I mean,
I guess I would actually rather see him fight Amir Khan, as ridiculous as that sounds.
Well, like I was actually saying on Twitter yesterday, I'm not fully against that fight. I don't really mind that fight. It's not really a fight that I'm, you know, pounding the drums for. But if he winds up fighting Amir Khan in the UK in September, that's pretty good business, you know. But going back to, like, the sales and stuff like that, just really quick, and I don't know where all these sources are coming from. I don't know who's saying it or who's telling these people things. But, for instance, like Dan Raphael earlier had said that the break-even point for Mayweather-Guerrero in terms of pay-per-view buys was going to be a decent amount over 1 million buys. And I'm not 100% sure that they even got to 1 million.
And Steven Espinoza, you know, the head of Showtime Sports, vehemently denied that. And then I think he also added that season 6 of Dexter was the best television achievement of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know where all these sources are coming from. I don't have access to these sources, so I don't know. But why I think that could potentially be important is that, you know, if that winds up being the case, like let's say hypothetically Mayweather Guerrero did 850,000 buys, and let's say that meant that with all the promotion, with the fighters' purses and, you know, the rights, everything, and all the production of the show, et cetera, let's say that they did not even break even. If that wound up being the case, then that might cause Showtime to start reassessing whether or not Floyd Mayweather is a good business for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know any of the specifics of the deal, and if anyone has an opt-out clause, we don't know any of that stuff. But
of course.
And theoretically, I mean, why wouldn't Floyd just say, okay, then just give me, you know, a $24 million guarantee, and I'll fight Devin Alexander, and then you'll break, you know, and then your break even is a lot lower. You know, I mean, he's still going to make a good amount of money headlining, you know, getting 95% of an 850,000 pay-per-view buy. So, yeah, I mean, the numbers were disappointing. I think they probably overpaid him a little bit. But, you know, he's still financially viable, obviously. I mean, 850, 900 is still a good number. It's just not what he's been doing.
Yeah.
And it's not good considering what they guaranteed him, $32 million, and supposedly, you know, the break-even point's 1.1 or 1.2.
Well, it's just...
I imagine, like, would we even know?
No.
Would they even say? Like,
we'll never
know. Sorry, we didn't make it. We didn't quite break even on this one.
That's a fair point, too.
Yeah.
Our first pay-per-view with the guy that we got from HBO that was supposed to be this, like, monumental move that's going to change everything, we didn't break even on our first show with him. Like, why would they say that? I guess people could find out, right? People who have access to things like that. But you'll hear
rumors, and that's probably about it.
Yeah. Like the car sold out rumors that we get from Golden Boy. Sold out. Tickets have been on sale for 15 minutes. Card sold out. And then all of a sudden that story's gone and it hasn't sold out and people are getting tickets on street corners outside the arena.
I think that's an interesting line of thought that suggested, like, whoa, if these numbers are really, really low, and that'll put pressure on Floyd to fight Canelo because that's a huge mega fight. But, you know, when you're making, what's the difference, 25, 20 million, 25, 30, 35, you know, you're in that ballpark. If he's really going to fight two times a year, which I'll believe it when I see it because it hasn't happened in 5 or 6 years, you know, you're walking away from Guerrero and Alexander and you're making over $50 million. I don't see that he's going to just be motivated to, like, oh, okay, well, Showtime lost a bunch of money. Now I'm going to go fight Canelo. I think you just renegotiate your minimum and you still make a ton of money.
Yeah, Showtime lost money. That's Floyd, really.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Does he care?
Well, and, you know, I mean, I think that Floyd's, he's obviously not a long-term investment, but in terms of money, I mean, it's basically guaranteed money. You know, whether or not they break even, I don't know. And, you know, obviously these things are speculation. And, you know, that should be emphasized, that none of us really know any of these numbers. And even with the, you know, quote-unquote official numbers, we don't even know how official those are because they could just be lying. You know, how do they even come up with these numbers? I don't know. But either way, one thing is for sure, and that's people are going to tune in. There's always going to be a nice chunk of people that you're going to be able to market these fights to no matter what happens. And so I think that in itself is good for Showtime because that's just kind of a promotional tool that they can, you know, use for other things as well, for other fights. So, you know, I think that it's probably better business for them than not, you know. But
raise their profile quite a bit. And I'm just going to kind of play devil's advocate and throw this out there. And obviously, competitively, we don't want to see this fight now unless Manny, you know, seriously recovers himself and gets a couple good wins. But, you know, if Pacquiao Mayweather, even after that brutal knockout, if that was on Saturday, it probably still does 2 million buys, you know, because names sell fights. It doesn't matter, you know, the general public doesn't know enough about the nuances of boxing. You know, it's names sell fights. I mean, look at Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson. It was like, what, 15 years after Tyson's prime? And does all 2 million pay-per-views? So,
yeah, I think it was like 2.1 million or something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, people have said, like, oh, it's that fight's dead. I mean, maybe from, like, a boxing insider standpoint, from a competitive standpoint, it's still name recognition. That's the biggest fight you could still make in the sport. So, you know, it's just him fighting guys. Either guy fighting another guy is going to probably do in the same kind of ballpark, 800, 900. Yeah. I mean, Canelo's bigger, but that's about it.
Well, I'm glad that you're the one to open that can of worms and not me, because I was thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm not saying I want to see the fight, but it's just a lot of people who have said, like, oh, that's dead. It's, you know, there's no money there. There's tons of money there still. Half the people I know are just casual sports fans. After Pacquiao got knocked out by Marquez, the first question was like, oh, is Mayweather going to finally fight him now? And
yeah,
I'm like, do you guys want to see that?
There was a comment on my recap. Someone put in, you know, obviously a devout worshiper of Manny Pacquiao, who wrote something like, even when Mayweather wins, he loses because he can't beat the Pac-Man. I don't even know what that means, but I know that person, they charge $100 for the pay-per-view, is going to watch the pay-per-view. You know, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
There's still going to be an argument for it. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Well, all the people who hate that fight, we order every pay-per-view. We just ordered Mayweather-Guerrero. You know, but something that's going to really capture, like, the casual sports fan. I mean, I hate to say it, but, like, that's still it just because those are the two biggest names of the generation. And I know a lot of
that's
people
right.
who are just casual boxing fans. They watch, you know, maybe the big fights, a few fights a year. And a lot of, you know, I've said to them, you know, Pacquiao's might never be the same. I mean, that was one of the most brutal knockouts I've ever seen. And all these guys are like, oh, no, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. That was one, you know, that was a lucky punch, you know. And but there's still a demand for that. I mean, it's crazy, but...
Yeah, I
Devin Alexander,
I don't know.
Or whatever, you know, like it's better than that, but it's not going to happen. So,
well, this is the problem. Is like
I
half the people I told about this fight, you know, it was like Mayweather's fighting. Who's he fighting? Guerrero. Who's that?
Yeah,
so
you
couldn't have expected this was going to, like, you know, I thought it was going to be pretty fortunate to do a million pay-per-view buys.
Yeah, and I was right along with your prediction of under, you know, either right around a million or maybe a little under a million. But, you know, I let go of Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather like a couple of years ago, long before he got knocked out. I don't want to, you know, get into that a whole lot just because that could be a super ridiculous time suck right there. But, you know, that is you're right, that is... What's that?
Screaming into a void.
Yeah, it's just
fight.
Yeah, it's just it's gone, and I'm not really going to put a lot of effort into it. But you're right, James, in that if they were to announce that fight for September or, you know, next May, if they could announce it for next May, a year from now, you know, and that fight, just the build up and everything would just generate obscene amounts of money and a shitload of pay-per-view buys. And so, I mean, basically the last thing I'll say about that fight is that I think that it's almost just kind of an indictment of boxing itself that fight never got made. Now, you can talk about the blood testing, and you can talk about needles, and you can talk about this and that. But seriously, though, it is not that often in boxing that two guys are the 1 and 2 pound for pound almost unequivocally, you know, across the board, and they're close enough in weight and prime that, you know, it's so rare that
happens.
It's
like every
20 boxing.
Years or something, yeah.
Yeah, it just does not happen that often. And the fact that they couldn't get it made when they both stood to make, you know, $50, $70 million for the fight, I can't even, like, wrap my head around the fact that they could not do that. You can poke me with whatever fucking needle you want for that type of money whenever you want. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, it just shows how messed up promoters are, you know? I mean, that's too many. There's so many egos involved, and I think that a lot of the fault lies there, too, you know? No one wanted to work with each other. I mean,
go ahead, Jimmy.
Like, obviously, and we're kind of sticking to this one a little too long, but... I mean, I'd settle for. Are we gonna get the winner of Peterson Matisse against Garcia? I mean, I would settle for that. But how often do we even get that? You know, there are good fights to make in divisions, and a lot of times we don't even get those. Never mind the kind of uber fight that is all anyone wanted to see for however long. But I would just settle for some quality competition. I don't even know how often we get that.
Well, Jimmy, you want to give us some quick thoughts on that Matisse Peterson fight?
Oh yeah, I'm all over that fight, dude. That's going to be awesome. I can't wait. I love Matisse, but I, you know, destroying Humberto Soto, who wasn't much at 130 really, even isn't really an accomplishment. And then, you know, Mike Dallas Jr. It was awesome, spectacular even, but not against the level of competition that's going to kind of enshrine you anywhere. And then the Usyk fight, that guy was, you know, dipped in bronze, but
that was crazy.
But that was like a lumberjack fight where only one guy had an axe.
Yeah.
And so Matisse was wailing on him for 10 rounds or whatever it took to get rid of him. And that was spectacular to watch because offensively he's so good. But even then, I mean, has Peterson faced the better competition? I would think he has, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
yeah, and Peterson is going to be, you know, Matisse, this aura about him, deservedly so, for just leaving a trail of bodies everywhere. And Golovkin has it too, but Peterson is a hard dude and a proven dude, and he you know, it's hard to hit him clean, and he works to the body and both hands going, and that guy, unless Matisse can catch him early, I think that's a real fight. And when it, you know, you hear Matisse, you automatically think carnage and that he's going to win, or at least I feel that way. But the more I think about it, that's quality competition right there.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, whether you scored, like, the Judah and the Alexander fights for Matisse or not, I mean, there's no denying that when he did face that top-level opponent, he wasn't as spectacular as he's been
right
against, you know, the Mike Dallases and Humberto Sotos. So I think mm-hmm. there's still some questions. I think there's a legitimate argument that Matisse has improved as a fighter. But, I mean, again, this is a big step up, you know, from the guys that he's been just blowing away. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm looking forward to it a lot, too. I think Peterson might be one of the most underrated guys, you know, in that weight area. I mean, nobody talks about Peterson. Everyone's talking about Matisse Garcia. You know, Peterson, mm-hmm. I mean, he's fought really good competition and, you know, blowing out Kendall Holt. I mean, that's one thing. But, you know, he held his own against, you know, the prime Amir Khan and came away with the win, so.
And he got up the deck against Victor Ortiz, which is important, right? I mean, Ortiz crumbled psychologically.
I thought Peterson won that fight.
Yeah, I think Matisse, right. I think Peterson had an argument to win that too. And Ortiz, yeah, he's a goofball, but the guy's a good fighter. The guy's really talented. And he knocked Peterson down twice in that fight, and Peterson
right.
came back.
And
yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that you need to see if you're going to give a guy a shot against Matisse, because the chances are Matisse is going to land something that's going to make your knees knock a little bit, right? And so if Peterson has a history of at least, you know, being able to tough out some rough spots, get up off the deck, come back harder, that's the kind of guy who's going to give Matisse a hard time. And he has that. He's proven that he can do those things. And he comes forward. I wonder, you know, if how Matisse responds to having Peterson under his chin and churning into his gut, and see, you know, how Matisse responds to that too. So I'm interested, definitely.
You know, I've said this so many times over the last, like, maybe couple months that, you know, it's probably getting sick. People are probably getting sick of hearing it. But I think the main thing that's getting lost and underrated with Matisse is that he's actually really skilled. He's not mm-hmm. just some, like, caveman dude who can punch. And it's actually the same for Golovkin, too. Both of them have, you know, extensive amateur careers. They've been fighting for a while. They're not just a couple of guys who can punch and then just go in looking for big shots. I mean, sometimes they do, and sometimes that works just fine. But at the same time, they're also both pretty solid boxers too. And I think that's going to be, you know, I'm not entirely sure who's going to win that fight, because I'm going to have to think on it a little bit more. But what I do know is that, you know, Lamont Peterson is a guy that he keeps winning. Like, there have been these handful of fights that he's winning, even though they're supposed to be even fights, or he's supposed to be the underdog, or it's almost like Jose Cito Lopez, you know, barring the Canelo fight, where there are these fights that he's just not really tabbed to win, but he finds ways to win them. And so, you know, you can't really count a guy like that out in the first place, but then add on the fact that he's actually skilled and that he's getting better as a fighter. You know, I think that almost makes Tim Bradley look good now, for the fact that he, I don't want to say he took Peterson to school, but he, you know, he outclassed him a bit at that time. And now Peterson has gone on. And I think that's one element, and I know I'm kind of branching off in 10 different directions here, but that's one element of what you were saying earlier, James, that is really important and kind of overlooked when you're rating fighters or trying to assess how good they are, is, okay, what about the guys that they've beaten? Did they just send him into retirement, or, like, did these guys not go on to do shit? Or did he beat a guy that went on to win, you know, some type of actual title, or win a fight against some guys who were actually really good?
Yeah, the win for Bradley gets a lot – it does get a lot better. I mean, it has gotten a lot better.
It sure seems to be. Yeah, it sure
seems to be. Let me just ask you guys, do you guys think if we do get the Matisse Peterson winner against Garcia, is that guy, the winner of that fight, is that guy a legitimate challenger for Floyd?
I don't see how it wouldn't be. I mean, I think that there might be kind of a size difference because I think Floyd has grown into being a pretty solid welterweight. I know that a lot of his fans are like, look at him, you know, he's barely weighing in at 142, you know, he's a small guy. He's not a really small guy. He's strong.
Yeah.
You know, these fellow welterweights and even junior middleweights, he's able to push them around.
Well, he's solid. He's not rehydrating like a lot of the other guys, so he doesn't come in the ring
exactly.
heavy.
That's
but, yeah, he's solid
yeah,
147 for sure.
And that's one thing that's so important that gets lost in training all the time is that half of the training camp is for making weight. It's not even for training. And Floyd doesn't do that. He just trains all the time because he stays in shape. And that's probably one of the reasons why he's so much better than everybody else. But, you know, I don't see why that fighter wouldn't be a challenge for Floyd because as far as we're concerned, they're 7 pounds apart, even less if you
yeah.
consider Floyd's not weighing at 147. And I would mm-hmm. consider that fighter probably the champion at 140 pounds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that makes sense. What do you think, Jimmy?
Yeah, I think so, because the guy who wins that fight, like you're saying, he's kind of the boss at 140. You've taken a tough road to get there. And so what's left for you, right? The Khan fight? I kind of think Khan is going to get Floyd next, so he's going up to 147 anyway. You might as well go up, especially when that's probably the best money fight for you. So if you come in at 144 or something, you're going to have to put weight on, right? So you take the best money on the table, and that's kind of what you're supposed to do. So, yeah, I can see it, definitely. That would make sense if you look at Haymon signing Matisse. Doesn't he then have all three of those guys? Like, whoever wins
yeah.
that tournament is a Haymon guy.
Is Peterson a Haymon guy?
I think so, yeah.
I think
okay.
he is as well.
Might as well be. He will be soon
yeah.
if he's not already.
Yeah.
Great point.
No joke.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's a fight that, like, you couldn't criticize Floyd there. If he fights that guy, you give him credit. I mean, he'll be fighting, like you said, a legitimate champ at 140, but he'll also be fighting, no knock on Peterson, but especially if it's a Danny Garcia comes out of that. I mean, I think then you have the case that, like, he's shown himself to be a real top-level talent. You know, I think Peterson
yeah.
gets kind of a bad rap because he's even the fights that he's won or, you know, drawn with Victor Ortiz, he hasn't looked as spectacular as the other two. But if it's Matisse
yeah,
and Garcia,
no thing about him, like he doesn't have a
right. He's just
I mean,
good. He's good at everything. He's good at everything.
Power.
He's not necessarily
yeah.
great at anything. But yeah.
yeah.
But I mean, if it's Matisse or Garcia coming out of that, and if let's just say Matisse beats Peterson and Matisse Garcia somehow ends in a knockout for one of those two guys. That guy's definitely got a case for Floyd, and if Floyd takes that fight, I mean, I think he's in there with a legit guy.
Yeah.
I agree.
On that. And you'll want to see it, right? Which
oh, yeah, of course,
is,
yeah.
is better than some of his options for opponents right now. So that,
yeah, I mean,
I
think stylistically
yeah.
the Devin fight just sounds so bad that, you know, at this point even Khan is like, okay, we'll take that.
Okay.
You know, I mean, at least Khan's got some speed and but you can't imagine him taking those right hands too well.
And that's pretty much what it comes down to for me is that I actually think that Amir Khan could give Floyd some issues stylistically, and he has very quick hands. But mm-hmm. the problem is that he is going to get hit sooner or later. And Floyd hits you right on the chin. He's not going to hit you like
yeah.
on the ear or like, you know, hit you on the
yeah,
shoulder or some shit. He hits you right on
yeah.
the chin. And Amir Khan is not going to be able to withstand that.
And his defense predicated on his feet. But at 147, like, Floyd's legs looked a little iffy against Cotto, 154. But on Saturday, and, I mean, this is in the context of he's fighting Robert Guerrero, too, which is the way you kind of have to weigh everything, considering the opposition. But his legs looked really good. So if Khan wanted to get on his bike or his unicycle and try and get the town, Mayweather could probably deal with that too, even if it required more mobility than he wants to show. So, yeah, I think the winner of the one, the kind of informal 140 tournament, whoever that guy is a legitimate, palatable opponent for Floyd.
Now, let's say let's say Adrian Broner gets past Malignaggi, and let's say he beats a guy like Devin Alexander. Do you think he's there?
In terms of money, yes.
It's a skimpy resume, but I mean,
in terms of money,
pretty good.
In terms of money, and would they put him in there? Yeah, hell yeah, they would. I have no question that they would.
Competitiveness, is that a fight you would look forward to?
No.
Not yet.
Wow.
No. I mean, I'm. I don't know. I'm the hater, but you know, I'm unconvinced when it comes to Adrian Broner. I'm not saying he's a bad fighter. He's definitely come a long way from when I thought that Daniel Ponce de Leon edged him out over 10 rounds a couple of years ago, or maybe a year and a half ago. But I think that he's come a long way. But, you know, a win over, DeMarco, that's, to me, that's basically the crowning achievement on his resume right now. And I'm kind of like, really? Like, I don't know. I'm not willing to start rating him pound for pound, and I'm not willing to start, you know, start talking about him fighting Floyd in terms of it being competitive. Would they do it? Yeah, I'm sure they would. But no, I'm kind of annoyed by the persona too.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe no, I'm the
I'd
wrong
like to
person.
See him,
to
I'd like to see him take on one of those top 140 guys before that happens, for sure.
Yeah, totally bypassing that division.
Right under a bridge, and everything Floyd said would just echo and reverberate off the walls, and Broner wouldn't have to say anything. It would be perfect.
That's a pretty rough press conference.
I don't know if you saw any clips from the press conference of the Broner-Malignaggi press conference, or even read quotes or anything. But that was pretty brutal. Paul Malignaggi was basically, you know, like spray painting this dude with shit.
Yeah.
And Broner was like, he didn't even know what to do. So, I mean, I would say that would probably be the most awkward press conference ever.
Yeah, well, that kind of reminds me, I wanted to just mention, like, this is the thing with Floyd, and I've always liked Floyd. I think he actually has a good personality buried somewhere deep down inside of, you know, at least an engaging, entertaining personality. But the last few years, it's like he's just so wrapped up in the same persona, and everything is like third person. Floyd Mayweather does this, Floyd Mayweather does that, and it's just the same lines over and over and over again. At the weigh-in to the post-fight, you know, interview with Jim Gray, and it just gets so tiresome.
Easy money.
It feels like a defensiveness or something, you know. I mean, I would love to just like have somebody pick this guy's brain about you know, boxing, because he obviously knows the game so well. He knows it'll take a lot more than he lets on. I mean, he watches a ton of fights, but everything from him just comes off like some kind of rehearsed, you know, line that it's just gotten to the point where, you know, there's just it's hard to distinguish Floyd Mayweather from this persona that he has.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, I don't care what any boxer has to say, to be completely honest. Like, I don't, you know, what am I going to learn from an interview with a guy who has given his entire life to doing this one thing? I don't know that it's going to be particularly interesting. You know, he's no different. And now he's become this kind of larger than life character. Like, He was at the weigh-in for Bundridge, Smith.
DJ Smith.
And I was like that. Yeah. And the guy comes out in riding boots and like a leather cap, and is so out of place, so obviously, you know, beyond the situation of anyone else in that building. And people are asking for things, and he's giving his answers to Ellerby, was then giving the answer back to the person who posed the question. And it's just so separated from everything.
Yeah,
that
Ellerby lives a charmed life, doesn't he?
I don't really know what he does or where he came from, but it's a sweet gig.
It's a nice job.
Yeah. Nobody likes it, but it's a sweet gig.
Well, I mean, I don't know, it never ceases to amaze me when I hear that so-and-so fighter you know, like every so often I'll hear from a fighter, nah, I don't really pay attention to boxing. Nah, I don't really watch it. Did you see such and such fight? And they're like, nah, I don't really watch fights. And I'm just like, what? Really? You know, and Vernon Forrest was actually one of those guys that I talked to a handful of times. And, you know, I would ask him about other fighters or other fights, and he'd be like, I, you know, just stop asking me because I don't even watch boxing. And I'd be like, I don't even know what to do with that. Every so often, you know, there are these fighters that come along that don't really watch a lot of tape, and, you know, they just kind of get in the ring and do whatever, and it's a job. But, you know, and there are guys like, you know, kind of like we were just talking about, like Mike Tyson. The persona that everybody knows about Mike Tyson, you know, is the bite fight. You know, that basically is the epitome of Mike Tyson right there, is the bite fight, as far as everybody knows, right? But then if you actually hear him speak, or if you actually try to talk boxing with him, he knows just about as much about boxing history and old fights and, you know, et cetera, as just about anybody, really. You know, he had access to a lot of really old tapes and really, you know, tape of old fights and stuff like that when he was training with Customato, and then when he was with managed by Caton. And so, you know, there are guys who, you know, if you kind of just peel back a few layers, and I agree with you, James, that if someone could just sit down with Floyd and get some of this stuff out of him,
I think Floyd's the same way. And I mean, look at Uncle Roger. The guy's like a boxing database. And I actually subjected myself to like the masochistic ritual of watching some of the post-fight press conference. And you hear Floyd talking about how he, you know, in the promotion, was like, oh, I've never seen Guerrero. I just heard he's flat-footed, or I watched his fight with Berto. And then he's talking about in the press how Guerrero lost to Katsidis and Casamayor. It's like, obviously he studied a little bit more, and he knew what to expect, and he executed the game plan brilliantly. And I would just like to see more of that side, rather than just everything being, you know, the same
money
dull line over and over again.
Yeah.
Gambling.
No, I'm with you. What's that, Jimmy?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to make abrupt changes to schedules or anything like that, but I wanted to hear what you guys had to think about the Pacquiao-Rios fight.
Real quick, I actually I extended the time of the episode to 2 hours just so that we didn't have to, like, you know, that we didn't have to rush off or anything like that.
Okay.
We don't have to stay for the full 2 hours, but, you know, I just extended it so that we're not rushing. But
okay,
James, go ahead.
And we gotta thank Jimmy, because from Canada this is costing like $12 a minute. I like the fight a lot. I think it's great. But there's a lot of question marks about Pacquiao here, and I think it's a really tough fight for him to take after just getting, you know, cold knocked out like that. But you know, I can't wait to see what happens.
Isn't that part of its appeal, though, I think?
Like, well, what's that?
Isn't that part of the appeal?
Well, yeah.
I mean, it is for me. I mean, before December, I would have figured that Manny, even with a degree of deterioration, kind of just bangs Rios' drum for however long it takes to get rid of him. But I don't know how he's going to come back from that. That was nasty, man. That knockout was nasty. So I don't know. The residuals of that make this fight probably closer than it would have been.
And, sure,
and,
sure.
You know, the fights are the fights where we don't know everything going.
Well, yeah, and that, you know, that's always interesting. But I've always liked Rios. Probably rated him a little bit higher than most people. Just, you know, the guy's so tough and so relentless. And even losing to Alvarado, and I thought he lost to Richard Abreu. I always thought he could probably give, you know, this last couple of years version of Pacquiao a tough fight. But now, yeah, you're right. I mean, the question marks and the fact that we don't know what's going to happen, and what happens when Rios lands a big punch on Manny, and, you know, will Manny have the same speed and the same, you know, instincts to, like, keep coming forward, throwing a lot of punches. But it's one of those matchups, man. You got to expect fireworks. I mean, you know there's going to be some leather traded there, and I think that's going to be a pay-per-view well worth buying.
Well, some of the talk, and I mean, this was just announced yesterday, so obviously I'm following the, you know, social sphere with this one, but some of the talk ever since it's been announced is how crappy it is that Mike Alvarado is not getting the shot. And, you know, I kind of agree, except for, you know, I just have to say that, you know, my buddy Cliff Rold, who I've known for years and years and writes for Boxing Scene, you know, he basically totally just summed up my thoughts on it. And that is that I feel bad for Mike Alvarado that he's not getting the shot and that he's not getting the payday. Because, you know, he beat Rios, and he kind of deserved it. But at the same time, an all-action fight like Manny Pacquiao versus Brandon Rios, that's just the type of thing that'll make me forget about feeling bad real quick. You know, that I just can't see any other way that this fight is going to go. I mean, Manny might try to come out and box a little bit or something. And in terms of boxing, I would say that he's on a different, you know, a slightly different level from Brandon Rios. But I can't imagine that lasting very long, because when Brandon Rios wants to fight, he's going to make you fight, and that's going to eventually happen, and there are questions that are going to get answered. But whatever they wind up being, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I think it's too bad for Alvarado that he's missing out on the big payday. I mean, that obviously sucks. But at the same time, I mean, Pacquiao's coming off a loss too, a much worse loss than Rios is, and it's not that it's – in a sense, yeah, I guess the winner's bracket, you should get the big money fight, but, you know, Marquez won that fight. So he's kind of the new man there. He's not the money guy, but I don't have any problem with Pacquiao fighting a guy coming off a loss. I mean, it's unfortunate for Alvarado, but, you know, I think Alvarado's still going to get some big fights. If Alvarado
and Rodnikoff
happens, that's great.
Sure.
And like kind of going real quick into a slightly, you know, different territory, but, you know, same game. What do you guys think about these fights? Well, they're trying to kind of nudge their way into China and kind of tap that market with Zhu Shiming, and then now they're going to have Pacquiao Rios in Macau. What do you guys think about that?
It means I can't go to Pacquiao Rios.
You're not going to fly over there? What the hell?
No, dude. No.
Yeah, it's only a 30-hour flight. Layovers in Tacoma and to Taipei.
Dude, I know. He's bitching about spending 3 cents a minute via email over, you know, to us, and now we're expecting him to go fly to China. It's not going to happen.
I know. And if it's 30 hours, it means it's 60, because I got to come back. I would never get the okay on that one.
Do a lot of reading on those flights.
That's true. You could do a lot of reading. But that's ultimately how I think about it. I don't care if boxing tries to get into markets, global markets. I haven't even thought about whether or not it's a good or a bad thing for the sport, to be honest. Because when a fight gets announced, I want to know where it is, because if I'm really into it, I want to know if I can go. And that is certainly not possible when a fight is in China. So it kind of bums me out. I imagine this fight would have been in Vegas, but Vegas is far more realistic for me than Macau. You know?
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, a couple of years ago, I don't really know why. My guess is that they're probably because they're really rich investors in Dubai. But literally a couple of years ago, there were like all sorts of rumors floating around about this fighter and this fighter fighting in Dubai. And to me, I was just kind of like, what are they getting at? What are they doing? They even floated rumors that Roy Jones was going to be fighting Vasily Yurov in Dubai, like maybe 10, 12 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. To me, the expansion into, you know, basically untapped territories is interesting to me. And I think that it's probably good for the evolution of the sport overall. But at the same time, you know, I'm with you, Jimmy, in that I want to see these fights. And if I can see them live, I want to, you know, but there's absolutely no way in hell that I'm going to China to go see a fight. You know, I love both guys, but not that much. Well, hey, let's start kind of closing it down. But before we do, I wanted to just briefly talk about what we have this weekend, which is not much, but I don't know. I just wanted to kind of mention it. On Friday, Showbox, there's going to be Dierijan versus Cleos Pendarvis. I'm not sure if either of you guys have seen these guys, but I guess if not, I'll kind of sum it up real quick. And that's what I've seen from Dierijan, who hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, well, in any event, he kind of reminds me a little bit of even kind of like an Adonis Stevenson, where he looks really solid, and he looks like a strong fighter, and he fights that way. He throws hard. He throws a pretty decent amount of punches. I think that based on his resume, he's fairly unproven. But Cleotis Pendarvis is, you know, he's not really, I don't think that he'll be much of a test. This probably won't be a real great show box. You know, Pendarvis is kind of, he's still fairly young and kind of young in the game, but I've seen him fight as an opponent a couple times. And basically, he's just a guy that will give you rounds. He has a really awkward kind of herky-jerky style from what I've seen, and that's basically about it for that fight card. If you guys have anything to say, by all means, please do, but there's not really a ton to say on these fights, I don't think.
I think Pendarvis beat Lupe Pintor's nephew, unless I'm thinking of somebody else.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think you're right. But that's basically the only interesting thing you could say about this fight.
Yeah, and Lupe Pintor was the man, but, you know, we'll see.
Well,
I think Jean needs to fight one of the top, you know, I mean, another somebody solid at 140. I'm kind of with you. This fight doesn't do a lot for me.
Yeah, it's just kind of filling time, I think, on Showbox. And, you know, boxing's on. I'll watch it. But other than that, whatever. And then also on Friday night is Friday Night Fights, of course. Vernon Paris is kind of on a comeback trail from after losing to Zab Judah. Not that I didn't expect him to lose to Zab Judah personally, but I didn't expect it to be as one-sided as it was. You know, Vernon Paris just kind of started giving up like halfway through the fight, you know, was pounding his chest, but then not punching, you know, stuff like that. And he's fighting Manuel Perez, and then on the undercard, it's going to be Lonnie Smith versus Cornelius Locke. And again, not a super strong card. Manuel Perez's claim to fame is basically fighting to a draw with Brandon Rios a couple years ago, but then losing by TKO, like a few fights later to Rios. And then he has a win over Jose Miguel Cotto. And that's pretty much, that pretty much sums it all up. It's just not a whole lot going on. These things are, kind of a weak weekend for boxing.
But
after,
know,
a few strong ones, you know.
Yes, speaking of, like, revisionist history here, though, that Paris lost to Judah, and that doesn't look as bad after Judah fought pretty well against Danny Garcia.
Yeah, no joke. All of a sudden, Zab Judah's looking more viable than we thought he would be.
Yeah, I've liked Paris before. He beat that guy Tim Coleman, who was kind of another prospect, although I think Coleman's been on a losing streak since that fight, so that you know, that win probably doesn't look as good either. But Paris is a pretty tough dude, and, you know,
yeah, Tim Coleman just kind of, like, you know, no disrespect to the guy, but he basically just after that fight I can't remember who it was against right the second, but he wound up just basically giving a bullshit effort in his next fight and losing on a Friday Night Fights, I think it was. So yeah, that win doesn't really look real great in hindsight.
Didn't Emmanuel Gustis give Paris a hard time on the undercard of Alexander Bradley?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that Vernon Paris is a guy that, you know, he looks solid, and I thought that he would be a lot better than he, you know, seems to be at this point. But, you know, he's interesting. He's kind of got a mouth on him. And, oh, it was Kendall Holt that was Tim Coleman.
Yeah,
Kendall
that's
Holt,
right.
Basically, yeah, it was just like he knocked him down like five times or something like that, and Tim Coleman just kind of like stood there. It was pretty embarrassing, and he hasn't fought since. That was like over a year ago. But yeah, I mean, there are a couple things to talk about on that card, but it's just not really, it's not a strong card, not a strong weekend for boxing. The biggest name fighting this weekend, from what I've seen on the schedules, is Vic Darchinian. Supposedly he's fighting, but I don't know. This is kind of, I think he might be past his expiration date, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Didn't Espinoza Boxing just sign him?
If they did, then I didn't hear about it, but if they did, then I don't know. Okay. I mean, I don't know how much they're going to get out of him. I mean, he's a guy that's already, spanned a handful of weight classes as it is. And
yeah.
He is, I want to say like 37 or something like that. And when you're a small fighter, that's old. So I don't know.
I'm wondering, I don't know. I'm not sure on the weights on this, but it just popped in my head. Like maybe they signed him to fight to get him in with Leo Santa Cruz or something like that. Is that possible?
That would be my thought. My thought would be that they would sign him to basically, kind of like how Golden Boy does frequently, is basically to sign a guy to get him in with an opponent or as an opponent.
Yeah. Well, one of those guys who has more name than menace at this point. But
yeah, exactly.
I've watched that.
Did Darchenyan beat somebody somewhat decent after he lost to Moreno? He fought on that HBO triple header, right?
Yeah.
Against Del Valle.
The Bella guy on the triple header that HBO had, or quadruple header, or whatever it was.
It's not a terrible opponent for a Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
No, don't get me. Vic is a good fighter. I used to be a pretty big like hater of Vic Darchenyan. I mean, I think some of it stemmed. It kind of started. Well, he comes off as an asshole, but also I was there when he knocked out Jose Victor Burgos, and Burgos was hurt. And I mean, initially he was just kind of being an asshole about the fact that Burgos was hurt, and he was kind of like, waving him off like he wasn't shit and stuff like that. And I was like, the guy is like really hurt. What the hell are you doing? And so I think that was part of it. And then I was kind of happy to see him get flattened by Nonito Donaire. And, but yeah, I mean, he's a really good fighter though. At the end of the day, he is a good fighter. A lot of people thought that he beat Abner Mares. I scored the fight for Mares myself, but that was a pretty close fight and he hurt Mares. I think that's the most I've ever seen Mares hurt.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting to see him come back, but I just don't know how, I don't really know what he's going to be doing for them, Espinosa at this point. It's kind of, I think it's kind of a dry well, or really close to dry.
Brought in to be a name for somebody, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that was basically our time. Like I said, I kind of expanded the episode, but just so that we didn't have to rush. But I think that was a pretty decent little chat about Mayweather-Guerrero and all things associated with it. Jimmy, I wanted to say thank you a hell of a lot for coming on the show today. You did a great job, and we look forward to having you back at some point, and hopefully it's not going to cost you, like, $17 Canadian.
I know. That's like $16 American.
I know. It's bullshit.
No, it's fine.
The currency exchange rate is tripping me out here.
Changes every day.
But really,
so unpredictable.
But really, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Nice to talk to you somewhere other than Twitter. Fully. Pleasure.
Beard. Yeah, man, definitely. And Patrick already said it, but, we're both huge fans of your work and pretty much aspire to be on your level someday.
Oh, I think we're all on the same level. Let's not be silly.
All right.
Well, you're being very kind. But either way, people, all you listeners, all you thousands of listeners, please check out thecoolestsport.com. badlefthook.com, and of course queensburyrules.com. Three of the, that's the dirty three boxing blogs out there right now that are basically, today they teamed up. They teamed up and made a super group. It was like, I don't know, name some super group, and that's what it was, and it was great.
Menudo.
So thanks everybody. What's that? Menudo? Yeah. I'll be Ricky Martin. You guys can be the other guys.
Yeah, the other guys.
All right.
Well,
thank you, everybody who tuned in.
Whatever you want. Whatever you want. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot, man.
No problem.
Yeah, we do
everybody
really appreciate it.
Everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for tuning in. Again, check out those sites. We'll probably be back next week. We'll see what we're going to have for you. But either way, for sure, we'll be back 2 weeks from now. and we'll be back with something. And there's a lot of stuff to talk about a couple weeks from now. So thanks again for tuning in. Check out those sites. And everybody, have a great day. Guys, say goodbye.
Take care,
fellas.